Okay, it's Parshas Pekudei, which is page 530. Although we're actually not going to focus that much on Parshas Pekudei, but I'll tell you in a second. Okay, so this Parsha, Parshas Pekudei, is the last of the five Parshas that deal with the construction of the Mishkan. And what happened in this week's parsha is that everything is donated, there's an account, there's an audit done on all the materials that came into the Mishkan, and then they actually construct and they finish and complete the Mishkan. So just as if you have a look at the first few psukim, the first few verses, on page 530, it says, Eile Pekudei HaMishkan. This is the reckonings, the audit, so to speak, of the Mishkan. Mishkan HaEidus, which was called a Mishkan, a tabernacle of testimony, because it actually testify to the presence of Hashem, Asher Pukad al pi Moshe, which was reckoned, which was instructed according to Moshe, Avodas haLevim, it was the job of the Levim, the Levites, to carry out this reckoning, this audit, Yad Isomar, led by Isomar ben Aaron Hakohen, the son of Aaron and the son of Aaron Hakohen. And then it makes mention of the two architects of the Mishkan, the Betzalel ben Uri ben Chur lemata Yehuda. Betzalel, the son of Uri, the son of Chur, the tribe of Yehuda. Asos kol asher tziva Hashem as Moshe. He did whatever Hashem had commanded Moshe. And the Itoi, with him, Ohaliyav ben Achisamach. There was someone called Ohaliyav, the son of Achisamach, lematei Don. Chorosh v'choyshev. He was a weaver and embroiderer. Roikem, Batcheles, Batcheles of Argoman. All the wool and all the materials that the Mishkan. So that's just an opening of the parsha. That sort of solves the whole parsha. Goes through everything that was actually done until the completion of the Mishkan. Okay, but actually, I don't want to focus on Parsha Pekudei. What I want to do this week is focus on something else we do this coming week, and that is this week is the first of the four special parshas. Special portions that we read around this time of the year, two before Purim and two after Purim. And it's the Parsha of Shkolim, the Parsha that deals with the mitzvah of the half a shekel. Just to give you a bit of a structure, just in case you're not completely familiar, the rabbis instituted that around this time of the year, in addition to the normal weekly Parsha, there's also four extra Parshas, right? The first one is Shkolim, the mitzvah of half a shekel, which deals with the mitzvah, the tax that the Jewish people would give once a year, the time of the Mikdash, time of the Beis HaMikdash, they would give a tax once a year, a half a shekel in order to buy animals for sacrifices and so on. The second of the four parshas is Parshas Zohar, to remember Amalek, what Amalek did to us, and the mitzvah of destroying the nation of Amalek. The third is Parshas Parah. It's the Parsha which deals with the red heifer, the Parah Aduma, that was necessary for people who came into contact with a dead body to become pure. And the fourth one is HaChodesh, which is the mitzvah of the calendar, and also the mitzvah of bringing the Korban Pesach, the Paschal offering, which was done in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the way this is done, just to give a bit of a structure, it's normally done not over 4 weeks, normally done over 5 or 6 weeks. The reason is because each of them have a particular placement of where they have to be. Right? The mitzvah, the parsha of shekel, the shekalim, right, always has to be read just before Rosh Chodesh Adar, the Shabbos before, or on Rosh Chodesh Adar itself if it's Shabbos. Right? The reason for that is because every year, right, every year, that's okay, every year, the Jewish people would bring, they would donate the half a shekel around this time of the year. What used to happen is like this. The cycle for donating the half shekels to bring the new sacrifices started from the beginning of Nisan. From Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they were supposed to use the new funds to bring sacrifices for the new year. And that's why at the first of Adar, right, the first of Adar, they would announce, they would send out a proclamation to remind everyone to give their yearly tax, the half a shekel. And that's why this week, this is why to remember that mitzvah, we read Parashat Shkolim, we read the mitzvah of giving half a shekel on the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Adar, or if it comes out on Shabbos, on Rosh Chodesh Adar itself, in addition to the weekly parashas. That's the first of the four special parashas. The next one, which is Zachor, which is to remember Amalek, that's always read on the Shabbos just before Purim, because of the connection to Purim, because Haman was from Amalek as well, and so on. Which is why, this year, for example, Shekalim is not followed directly by Zachor. There's a Shabbos of nothing in between. So this Shabbos is a special parasha, Shekalim. We take a break then the following Shabbos, and the following Shabbos after that is the Shabbos of Erev Purim. That's when we read Zachor. Yeah? Then the way it works is that the next two, which is Parah, the one about the red heifer, and the one about the Korban Pesach, that's read before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, because it was that time of the year, in the temple times, that would remind everyone that we need to get ready to sacrifice the Paschal offering, but also to remind everyone that those people who need to become pure, who have come into contact with a dead body, and might not be eligible for bringing the Korban Pesach, need to make sure they get sprinkled on by the red heifer's water, in order to become Tahor, right? So the way it works is that Parashas HaChodesh, that last Parashah, we always read on the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, or on Rosh Chodesh Nisan itself of the Shabbos, and the one of the red heifer we read just the Shabbos before. Okay, that's our structure. So, that's just an overall structure. But this week, again, is the first of the four special Parashas, and it's Parashas Shekalim, it's the midst of giving a half a Shekel. Let's have a look at it. It's not in this week's Parashah, it's actually a few weeks ago. I'll give you the page number. It's 2 weeks ago, we read it actually in the weekly Parashah. Page 484. So the parasha says the following. Again, this is the extra piece we read this week. In a second Sefer Torah. The parasha says, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemer, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Kisisa es Rosh Bnei Yisrael, when you count, when you take a census of the Jewish people, Lifkudehem, according to all their numbers, you're not allowed to count them, you have to do it in a special way. Venosnu ish koifer nafshoi laHashem, each man shall give what the Torah refers to as the atonement of his soul, bifkoid oisam, when you count them, v'layiye bohem negef bifkoid oisam, in order to avoid a plague. In other words, counting them just by numbers is dangerous. Don't count them. Make sure that they do it a different way, so there shouldn't be any plague that will plague you. How should you count them? Zeh yitnu, this is what they should give. Kora over alap kudim, all those that have to go through the census. Each person should give machzis hashekel, the half a shekel, the shekel hakodesh, with a holy shekel, a certain currency. There's a shekel and there's a holy shekel. So the holy shekel is a particular country. Esrim geira hashekel. Each shekel has 20 geira, so therefore machzis hashekel, half a shekel, chumal Hashem, would be 10 geira, each person giving the half a shekel, right? Page 484. Who had to give it? Kol ha'over al apkudim, all those that of military, so eligible for military service. Ibn Esrim shon v'mala, from 20 years up, yitein chumas Hashem was given, should give this donation to Hashem. So it was really a mitzvah for the from 20 to 60 actually. The men of 20 to 60 would give the half a shekel. He'oshir lo yarbe, the rich may not increase this donation. Ve'hadal lo yamit, the poor may not decrease. Imach says Hashem, everyone has to do exactly the same. Lase says trumas Hashem, to give the trumah of Hashem, l'chapra al nafshe seichem, to atone for yourselves, right? So that was the mitzvah. The mitzvah was, as I told you, I think 2 weeks ago, in the time when they built the Mishkan, there was two machzis hashekel. One was a one-off, which they used to melt down and build the sockets for the beams. But then there was a yearly thing. They would give the shekel every year, half a shekel, and they would buy new sacrifices with it. And it was done around this time of the year. They started to give it from Rosh Chodesh Adar, which is why we read the special Pasha. In addition to the weekly portion, we read the Shabbos. But what also comes into this parasha is an important thing which we're going to talk about, is that it was also used as a means to count the Jewish people, to take a census. That there's a prohibition in the Torah against counting people, but the way it was done is, it was done through each one giving a half a shekel, and that's the way it was, that you used to count the half a shekels, and then you would know how many people there are. Right?
Why the prohibition?
We're going to talk about it. That's what we're going to focus on. But before we get there, just a few things. First of all, what is the purpose of this mitzvah? Just the chinuch, sefer ha-chinuch, which always explains the mitzvah of the Torah, says an interesting thing. He says that in the service of the Beis HaMikdash represented all Jewish people. And therefore the sacrifices and the service was something that represented and affected, had an impact on the entire Jewish nation. And therefore what Hashem wanted to do is Hashem wanted to give every person, a very interesting concept this, to give every person a part of that mitzvah. In other words, what could have happened is he could have just taxed the rich, or fundraised and, I don't know, run an appeal campaign or whatever the case is, and let everyone who can give a lot of money, and then they'll have the money to buy the sacrifices every year. The problem with that is that people will lose out. In other words, not everyone will have a chelek, not everyone will have a portion in that mitzvah. So therefore Hashem did it in such a way where this particular mitzvah is a half a shekel each person, there's no more and there's no less. The idea is that each person has the opportunity to participate in the mitzvah of bringing the sacrifices and the lighting the candles and all the other things that were done in the Beis HaMikdash. Right? Now, this particular mitzvah also has a very interesting connection to Purim. In other words, like this. On a simple level, the reason that we read it this Shabbos has nothing to do with Purim. It's got to do more with the fact that they used to use the yearly tax to buy new sacrifices from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which is a month away. And what they would do is at the beginning of Adar, they would send out messengers for people to be reminded to give this mitzvah of Machzor Shekel, which is why we read it this time of the year, right? But on a deeper level, there's a Medrash, I've mentioned it a few times, the Medrash says that Haman, when he came to destroy the Jewish nation, he offered Achashverosh 10,000 kikar kesef, right? Kikar kesef. And the Medrash says that a heavenly voice came out and said, you are trying to destroy the Jewish nation by paying so much money to the king. You need to understand that's impossible because the Jewish shekels, half shekels, have preceded your shekels. And therefore the schus, the merit of that mitzvah, will avoid the tragedy of the potential tragedy of Purim and bring salvation and then ultimately bring about the whole story of Purim, right? Now, actually this is very exact because apparently if you do the maths on the currencies, 10,000 kikar kesef equals 600,000 half shekels, which is the amount that was given basically to the Jewish people in Midbar, because it was all the people between 20 and 60, and there was about 600,000 people, that was the census, and therefore the correspondence. So in other words, he was trying to destroy a nation which is rooted in the number of 600,000 through his kikar kesef for these shekels. Hashem said the shekels that the Jews gave was already preceded that, and therefore the salvation will ultimately come. Okay? We need to understand that. Why is it so powerful? What is the power, so to speak, of the half a shekel that it was able to, I mean, it's a nice idea, you know, that we gave shekels, he gave shekels, same number. But what actually is the power of the half a shekel which brought about the ultimate salvation? What does it represent? So first of all, let's just go back to this idea that actually one of the things the half a shekel was used for was to take a census, was to count, right? Now, Rashi brings over here this idea that he says, whenever you want to count the Jewish nation, to know how many there are, you must never count the people, right? So always be a half a shekel or something, and you'll know their number. Because if you don't do that, counting, when you count people, it brings about the evil eye, the ayin hara. It emphasizes their existence and therefore opens up some sort of scrutiny, and therefore they are susceptible to the concept of ayin hara, which is the evil eye, and therefore they will suffer as a result. And it might be a disease or a tragedy or a plague, whatever the case is. As happened in the time of David HaMelech. David HaMelech happened, he accounted the Jewish people and he made a mistake. There's a whole discussion about what his mistake was. Was it because he thought it was only time of the Midbar he had to do that, or was always? Bottom line is he took a census and he counted the people without them giving an object, without them giving something to count instead of them. And the Mustaka broke out a plague and a lot of people died. Right? That's what Rashi mentioned. And therefore we know there's this whole idea that we don't count people. Like if there's men in a minyan, each of there's 10 people, you don't count them, you say a pasuk, you say a shia samecha, you know? There's a pasuk, a shia samecha, varach as nachal asecha, or reim anasim, but it has 10 words. Or the brach of amoitzi, varach ato Hashem, and okay, and amoitzi lechem and aretz, also has 10 words. Right? Or in Yiddish, there's an expression that you don't count them, you say not one, nicht eins, nicht zwei. Right? So you don't count people. Yeah. Some people don't. Well, that's the number of how many children they have, or grandchildren they have, all kinds of things, right? Okay. You don't count. Now, it's interesting, when the Gemara discusses this prohibition, the Gemara actually doesn't use this as a source, which is interesting. And a lot of my Farshim talk about it. The Gemara uses other psukim. One of the sources that we know from this concept is King Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech, when he sent the soldiers to war, he says he counted the military. Right? He counted the infantry to know how many of the people belonging to the army, and he counted them with goats, it says. And they gave goats, and he counted them that way. And that's one of the sources. You're not supposed to count people, rather count things rather than people, right? And the commentary discuss, why is it that way? Why do we need to know from Shaul HaMelech? Why can't we go straight to the source? I mean, it's pretty clear in the Torah that you need to count people. I mean, you need to give half a shekel. That's the only way you should count people. Otherwise, there'll be a plague. So why don't we just go to this parasha directly? Why do we need to go to other stories in Tanakh like Shaul HaMelech? Right? We can learn it straight from the Chumash. And there's various answers. One of the answers is given by the Sfas Emes. The Sfas Emes says that no, because we actually do learn it from this week's parasha, but we just bring Shaul HaMelech for emphasis, because one of the mistakes that could be made from this week's parasha is that prohibition only applies if you're counting the whole Jewish nation or the whole cross section, whatever. But if you're only counting a few people, like Shaul HaMelech only counted the infantry, it might be okay. So therefore, no, we bring Shaul HaMelech that he understood the pasuk correctly, and that you don't do that. And even if you count a few people, you're not supposed to count them. They're supposed to give something, or you count them a different way. But you don't count even a few people, and that's why we bring the source of Shaul HaMelech. Okay. Now, let's understand this. Because we seem to find a contradiction with the whole idea of counting. Right? On the one hand, we found that the Jewish people were counted many times throughout Chumash. Right? And in fact, Rashi brings the beginning of Shmos, where it says, at the beginning of the book of... this week we're ending Shmos, it's Parshas Pekudei, but at the very, very beginning of the book of Shmos, where it says that the Eila Shmos B'nei Yisrael, these are the names of the Jewish people are going down to Mitzrayim. Rashi brings over there that Hashem always counts the Jewish people. He lists their names when they're alive, and lists their names when they're gone, right? Just like stars. Like stars, it says in the Pasuk at Tehillim, and David says in Tehillim that when Hashem brings out the stars at night, He counts them, He gives them names. Why? Because stars, special things. So to the Jewish people, like Hashem, stars, so to speak, therefore He counts us and enumerates us. More explicitly, in the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar, which is known as the Book of Numbers, right? Where everything is counted, including the Jewish people, a number of ways. Rashi says the following. I'll read it to you in English. Rashi says like this. Mitoichi basam. Because of the preciousness, because of the love that Hashem has for Jewish people, Moina oisam kol shah, He counts them all the time. When He took them out of Mitzrayim, He counted them. When they fell with the Egel, the golden calf, and some of them died, He counted them again to know how many were left. When He came to bring the Shekhinah, when they put up the Mishkan, He counted them again. Right? Because the first of Nisan, the Mishkan was put up. A month later, He counted them again. The second of year, right? So Hashem always counts Jewish people. It's considered beautiful, it's considered important. Counting us means that we matter. Like the Gemara says, that something that is counted doesn't become nullified in something else because it's a precious thing. The whole thing, counting seems to give us some sort of prominence, seems to give us some sort of importance, and therefore, counting seems to be a really good thing. On the other hand, and this question I'm going to share with you is a question asked by the Shaloh. The Shaloh was a great Kabbalist, his name was Rabbi Yitzchak Horowitz. He was born in the 16th century in Prague. He later became the chief rabbi of Prague. Then he had a lot of trouble from the anti-Semites, and eventually he made his way to Eretz Yisrael. He lived in Tzfas, which was the seat of Kabbalah at that time. Still is, actually. And then at the end of his days, he was in Tzfas, and then he passed away actually in the city of Tveria, and is buried in Tveria. And he says that it's a very strange thing. On the one hand, we find that counting is a tremendous thing. On the other hand, there's a Gemara, a famous Gemara. The Gemara says that if you want bracha, bracha only rests on something which is hidden from the eye. Right? The Gemara says that if you like growing wheat, growing produce, you know, and you want a special bracha from Hashem, that it should go abundantly. It should be extra bracha, sometimes even a supernatural bracha. abundance, extra, plenty. That will only happen if it's Dover hasomui mina ayin, something that is hidden from the eye. And the Gemara says that the bracha does not rest on something which is counted or something which is exposed, but only something which is somui min ha'ayin, hidden from the eye. Right? And the Gemara brings a pasuk because it says, Yitzav Hashem itcha sabracha ba'asomecha. Hashem shall command the blessing upon you in your silos. Silos, the place you keep the produce. But the word ba'asomecha could also come from the word somui, to be covered. Right? So therefore, the Gemara says something only that's covered is, I mean, we're not there, we know this whole, that's why we don't count people. Because counting people exposes them, right? We do have a concept in Gemara called the Ayin Hara, the evil eye. When you expose something too much, when something is flashy and open and in everyone's eyes, it's not a vessel for the bracha, right? And it becomes an exposed thing. So counting has a very negative connotation to counting. As I said before, some people will not give the number of their children or grandchildren. You know, that's what people say, Ken and Hora. It's like this thing we have, the belief we have, even though the Gemara says that when it comes to things like the Anhora, if you don't worry about it, it won't harm you. That's why it's not good to worry about it. It's good just to be distracted from it, not to worry about it. But nevertheless, the concept exists. Yeah? So that's what Shalos says, it seems to be this contradiction. And also we need to understand that if there is a negative connotation of counting, how does the Machtas HaShekel help? So how does it actually help? Bottom line is, if you do a census and you count the half a shekels, you're still exposing them. Which is in the Torah, right? They counted the Jewish people and there's 600,000 of them. So we know that. We know the number. So it becomes a counted thing. Once it becomes a counted thing, so what difference does it make if it became counted through numbers or became counted through Machtas HaShekel, right? So the Shalah gives an explanation, and I'm going to share it with you together with how it's also presented and developed and explained in Hasidic philosophy. It goes like this. It says there are two kinds of counting. A good counting and a bad counting. And the way the Shalom puts it is that there's the counting of this world and there's the counting of Olam Haba, the world to come. The way Kabbalistic terminology is used, they say that there's the counting in the revealed world and there's the counting in the hidden world. Right? Let's develop what that means. In Kabbalah we have that when Hashem created the world, there are different forms of reality, different forms of existence. And one of the ways it's broken up, that in Kabbalah they talk about Alma de Iskasya, the hidden existence, and Alma de Isgalia, the revealed existence. Right? The revealed existence refers to the world, or the spiritual world as we know it, that which Hashem created, where He didn't remain, so to speak, in his transcendent reality, the way he's aloof and detached from existence, but through the process of tzimtzum, through the process of watering it down and contraction and hiding his infinite reality, he exposed a world that is finite. Okay? That's the one form of existence. It's an open, exposed world, a world that we can relate to. And we can relate to it because it is finite, because it's mugbal, it has a gvul, it has a border. It's limited, it's finite, it's at an end, it has a beginning, right? That's the one world. That's the world where God's infinity is hidden. That's the world where arrogance lives, because arrogance is a sign of lack of awareness of Hashem's presence. If we were always aware of Hashem's presence, we wouldn't be arrogant, because we'd realize that we are nothing compared to Hashem's infinite existence. And in fact, no, we're nothing, but we're all part of Hashem's ultimate reality, and therefore there's nothing to be arrogant about. Right? We're not independent, we don't make our own talents, we don't create ourselves. We're all part of an extension of Hashem's infinite reality, and therefore we should rather have a complete feeling of being subservient to the infinity of Hashem, rather than feeling arrogant. Ego is when I feel that I'm alone, I'm independent, I'm my own man, so to speak, right? Which is, of course, the antithesis of ultimate Jewish belief, which is the subservience and dependence on Hashem. So that's what we call the hidden world. The revealed world, sorry. What's the hidden world? Hidden world means hidden from us. What does it mean, hidden from us? Hidden world refers to those realities, those spiritual existences, which are transcendent, which are hidden from us, because it's those worlds or those forms of existence where Hashem's presence is obvious. And because Hashem's presence is obvious, that's a world of infinity, a world of unlimitedness. That's a world where things don't necessarily have a beginning and an end. They are much more unlimited and much more infinity, because the infinity of Hashem is obvious in those existences. Right? Therefore, they explain that because of that, there's two aspects of counting. You see, when you count, right? Counting can mean two things. Counting something can, in other words, counting can result in either one of two emphases. On one hand, the emphasis of counting could actually bring about a feeling of finiteness. So you count something is the feeling, I only have a certain amount. So in other words, it emphasizes its limitation, its finiteness, that it's each thing, one is separate to two, two separate to three, there's only 10, there's only 15, whatever the case is. So on the one hand, counting emphasizes to a very, very big degree the concept of this is what it is and that's it. It doesn't grow. On the other hand, counting could have a connotation of abundance. Right? Like counting, it's like so much of this. Keep counting and counting and counting and counting, doesn't it? Right? So counting could reveal a finiteness, counting could reveal an abundance. Okay? And the way the Kabbalists explain it is this. When the counting comes from the revealed world, from the world of the finite, then the emphasis of counting is how it's limited. Which is why the Gemara says that a bracha doesn't rest on something which is counted. Because once you count it in this world, it just emphasizes its finiteness. It emphasizes the way it was created is the way it is. It doesn't change. It cannot grow. There's no infinite bracha that's going to flow to it, because it is what it is, the way Hashem created it, and that's it. Right? But he says, if the counting is one which is rooted in the hidden world, which is rooted in Olam Haba, which is rooted and connected with the infinity of Hashem, then suddenly counting becomes a beautiful thing. Counting becomes a process which reveals the abundance, the infinity. It reveals how you count them, because you count something that's precious, right? But when you count something that's precious, the more of it is better. So when the counting is a counting which is connected with the Olam Haba, with the hidden worlds, then it's a counting which shows the value and the preciousness of the thing, but not in a finite way, more in an abundant way. Okay? And that's why when Hashem counts the Jews, that's the concept. The counting of the Jews is a hidden counting. It's a beautiful counting. You know that the one of the expressions of counting the Jewish people in the Torah is that it says that the Jews will be like the sand of the sea, ka'afar ha'aretz, right? One of the places that says they'll be like kechol hayam, like the sand of the sea, asher lo yimad v'lo yisofer, that cannot be measured and not be counted. And that's a very interesting phrase, because what do you mean? In theory, the sand of the sea is finite. There's only a certain amount of particles in the sand. Take you a while to count them, but there is only a certain amount, right? So why does it talk about it will be like? Why does it talk about all the dust? Why the sand of the sea? So one of the explanations is that in this world, dry land and sea represents these two worlds: the revealed world and the hidden world. Yeah. Because it says in the Gemara that whatever is on dry land is also in the sea. In other words, what's underneath the ocean? A whole world just hidden. It's hidden from us, which represents those existences that are detached from us, aloof from us, hidden from us, because they're much more infinite existences where the presence of Hashem is much more obvious. Whereas dry land is revealed world, meaning a world that's revealed to us, which represents the finite existence, right? So Hashem says, and of course the Jewish people are counted, but their counting is a precious counting. It represents infinity. And that's why it says they'll be like the sand of the sea, because it's a counting which is connected to the hidden worlds, like the sea, like the yam, the ocean. And that's why, although each one is a separate particle, and each Jew is separate, and each Jew is precious, and that's why they're counted like precious things, but nevertheless, they will not be measured and not be counted, because it's a counting that represents infinity. Okay? Now, how do you do that? How do you connect? How do you make sure that when there's accounting, it's accounting that's connected to the hidden world? How do you make sure? So there's a fascinating Gemara that talks about counting things. I'll give you the context so you understand how it works. There's a Gemara somewhere that talks about mixtures of kosher and non-kosher things, right? And there's a concept in halacha called bittul. Bittul means when a non-kosher thing is mixed into a much bigger kosher thing, then the non-kosher item becomes neutralized. I mean, it becomes nullified. So let's see if it's not there. And one of the discussions in the Gemara Beitza talks about a treif egg that fell into lots of kosher eggs. Right? And the question, the analysis there is, whether if it falls into 1,000 eggs, whether the whole thing is still treif, or because it's fallen into so many eggs, it becomes kosher, it becomes nullified. And the Gemara discusses there a particular opinion, right, about two ways something is sold. There's certain things that are always sold, not by counting them, it's always sold by weight, right? So you don't buy, mung beans. You don't buy mung beans by saying I want 12 dozen mung beans, right? You buy a case, right? Or even strawberries. You don't buy a dozen strawberries, you buy a case of strawberries, a thing of strawberries, right? Then there's certain things, for example, that are always, always counted. Nowadays we buy eggs like that. In the time of the Gemara, it wasn't like that. In the time of the Gemara, eggs were sometimes counted, sometimes not. You could buy like a box of eggs just without counting, or you could buy like we do today, a dozen of eggs, right? And then there's some things that are always specifically counted, only counted. You never buy them. They're too precious to buy by the case. You know what I mean? They always, it's, right? I don't know, watermelons.
Mangoes.
Expensive mangoes, right? So you always buy a specific amount. Okay. Now, the halacha is that something that is specifically counted, because it gets prominence, because it gets really important, right? It doesn't become bottle, it doesn't become nullified. So if something is one of those items that's always sold through counting, right? If it falls into even 1,000, it doesn't matter, it never becomes nullified, the whole thing becomes trade. Because it's too important to become nullified. Follow? Sorry? Okay, now the eggs are the same, because in the times of the Gemara, eggs weren't sold like today. In the times of the Gemara, eggs were sometimes counted and sometimes not. Alright. So the Gemara brings an opinion that actually could become nullified. And the only things that wouldn't become nullified is something that's always counted. Alright? And the way the Gemara puts it is the difference between these two things is called when something's counted, it's called darkoi limonois. Its way is to count, its norm is to count it. So the Gemara talks about two kinds of items. One is kol shadarko limonis, and the other one is es shadarko limonis. Right? Now the phrase is hard, but what it essentially means is this. When the Gemara talks about kol shadarko limonis, it means things that could become nullified, it's not that important, because it includes everything that's counted, but also includes things that sometimes aren't counted, right? So in times of the Gemara, much of me nowadays, but in times of the Gemara, eggs was part of the things that wasn't always counted, therefore it's called kol shadarko limonis. Right, it fits into the large group of things that are counted. But then there's stemming. Then there's another group of foods which are called es shadarko limonis. Es means specifically counted. It's always counted, right? And only a few items fit into that category, and that category never becomes nullified. So the shalah, and developed again in works of Hasidus and in Kabbalah. They say like this, very interesting thing. You know, in Gemara, we find the Arizal, for example, had a custom. The Arizal was a great Kabbalist, right? And we know that everything in Torah can be understood on many levels. The Arizal had a custom that when you learn a piece of Gemara, a piece of Talmud, for the six days of the weekdays, he would learn each day the Talmud from a different halachic analysis viewpoint. On Shabbos, he would learn the same Gemara, but from a total Kabbalistic point of view. Because every item in Torah can be understood in many levels. I'll give you an example. the very, very first Mishnah. Just to give you an example of how things can be understood different, different levels. The very, very first Mishnah in the Talmud and Brachos, it says, it talks about the time from when you can read the Shema. There's a mitzvah to read Shema at night, right? So from when? So the way it says is, Me'ei Matai Karina Shema. From when? Ei Matai means from when. Me'ei Matai. From when can you read the Shema? And it goes on to explain. The way the Kabbalists translate the Mishnahs were different. The word Me'ei Matai, Ema means fear, focus. That Me'ei Matai Karina Shema, when you read the Shema, it should be from a standpoint of fear of Hashem. Right? Different translation of the same Mishnah. I mean, from when is a halachic question. Or it's a statement, a Kabbalistic interpretation of the same Mishnah, Me'ei Matai, from Ema, from fear of Hashem, you should read the Shema. I'll just give you an example how the same Mishnah can be understood on two levels. So here we have the same idea. That these two types of items which are counted, Kol Shadar Kalimonis and Es Shadar Kalimonis, is the two types of the good counting and the bad counting. The bad counting, remember, is a counting which is only, it's a counting of the revealed world. It's a counting of the world which we know of, which is the world of finiteness, the world of mundaneness, the world where God is not obvious, the world which apparently appears to be disconnected from the true infinity and presence of God. The other counting, again, is the counting from the hidden worlds, where the counting connects and is tags on, so to speak. It's counting, but it tags on to the infinity of Hashem, the hidden existences, the hidden realities, where the infinity of Hashem is much more obvious, where the counting becomes more of a sign of preciousness, but it's a sign of abundance and infinity and goodness. So they say that's the two words, kol and es. Right? There's the counting of kol, and the counting of es. Kol is a word of presence, everything. It's like an ego word almost, right? In fact, the Gemara says a fascinating thing. The Gemara says there's a pasuk that says that when Hashem created the world, He created. One second. Let me just. I forgot an expression. Yeah, we say in davening, in the beginning of the Shema Baruch says, Yotzer Or Hashem formed light, Ubarecha Shechani, and He created darkness, Oseh Shalom He made peace, Ubarei Et HaKol, and He creates the kol, right? So the Gemara says over there that the kol here in davening is actually a euphemism for bad. Why? Because actually it's based on a pasuk in Tanakh which says that Hashem creates Yotzer Tov, He creates good, Ubarei Ra, and He creates bad. But the davening didn't want to use the word bad, so it said, Ubarei Et HaKol. Creates everything, everything. All of existence. Existence the way we know it. So kol, when the kol is associated with counting, that's a reference to the negative counting. When the word es is connected with counting, es is different. What is the word es in the Torah? Es in the Torah is a very strange word. It comes up all the time in the Torah, you know that. Right? Es or ace, right? The word et, like even in this, right? This week's part, this one we're learning now, Kisa es Rosh Bnei Yisrael, right? It doesn't actually have a meaning. I don't know if you know, like, huh?
Yeah, it doesn't have a meaning.
Doesn't have a meaning. It's a strange word, es. Every time you have es in the Torah, most times you can actually read the sentence without the word es, and it would make perfect sense, right? It's like an emphasis word, yeah. But what it means is, it normally means something which it's a word that doesn't have a, it's a word that has no meaning on its own, right? It's a word that only makes sense if it's in context, if it's tagged onto a different word. So Bereishis Bara Elokim Hashem in the beginning Hashem created, could say Es Hashemayim, the heaven. Es is another word of saying the heaven. Es Aretz, Es on its own, you can't even translate the word. If you put it together with another word, then it has meaning. Es Hashemayim, right? So it's a word which is only sensible if it's secondary to a different word, right? By the way, because the Gemara says there was a great Tanna who, because of the difficulty with the word S is actually a superfluous word, he learned halachas out of every single word that says the word S in the Torah. Because every S is there for a reason, right? For example, in the beginning of the Chumash, Rashi says, Bereishis Bara Elokim Hashem, in the beginning Hashem created, Es HaShamayim Ves HaAretz, the heaven and the earth, means the heaven and all that comes with the heaven. And Es HaAretz means the land and all that comes with the land, right? Or, for example, the famous pasuk of Kabed es avicha v'esimecha, honor your father and mother, right? I could just say Kabed avicha v'imecha. What's es avicha v'esimecha? So the Gemara says es avicha means it includes to includes an older brother, or esimecha includes Torah scholars. Whatever the case is, it always includes something else, right? So the word es is a secondary word. It means like a word that's secondary. Says the Shalad, is what it means. That es shadark limones, if the counting is a counting, where the counting doesn't emphasize the thing that's being counted as something independent, detached from the reality of Hashem, but rather it's es shadark limones, it's a counting which emphasizes its attachment to Hashem, the subservience to Hashem, that we are not something on our own, our importance, our prominence is taken from the fact that we are S, we are secondary, we are connected to a higher reality, to a hidden world, to a hidden reality. If that's the type of counting, then it's a counting which is a humble counting. That's a counting which does bring blessing. It's a positive counting. And it's a counting which shows our importance, our preciousness, and our infinity, as opposed to our finiteness. So if it's called, if it's just everything, which means this is what it is, and it's the hidden world detached from it's the revealed world detached from the hidden world, then it's a negative counting. But if it's S Shadar Kalimonets, if it's a counting connected with the word S, which means it's a secondary counting, it's a counting which is just tagging on to something greater, then it becomes much more important, much more prominent, and much more precious, and has no negativity. Because it comes from God's infinite blessing. And God's infinite blessing, things can be blessed even though they're counted, because they're connected to infinity, and infinity has no bounds, and therefore it can grow and it can be blessed, even though it's counted. On the contrary, the counting it only has the positive aspect of it, the fact that it's precious and it's being counted. Clear? Now we can understand the power of the Machzis HaShekel, right? Because what is the idea of Machzis HaShekel? The whole idea of Machzis HaShekel is that it was given in a way where only a half was given. Right? What's the idea? One of the concepts behind Machzis HaShekel is that we all give a half a shekel to emphasize, and we count ourselves with a half a shekel to emphasize that we have no complete existence on our own. That we're only half the equation. That our true existence is only complete when we connect either with another person, or one of the interpretations is we connect with Hashem. In other words, it's a counting which represents humility. Right? And when you count a person on their own without the Machzis HaShekel, it's a counting of arrogance. And therefore it becomes a negative counting. It becomes the counting of the revealed world, where it's an egocentric counting, and therefore it's a counting which just emphasizes the finiteness of this revealed world and doesn't bring blessing. On the contrary, the Torah warns that it could bring plague and it could bring tragedy and so on and so forth. But when the counting is done through the Machzis HaShekel, then it eliminates the negativity of counting and it only brings in the positive part of counting. Why? Because the counting is done through Machzis HaShekel. The counting is done through the process of emphasizing the S, that our subservience to a higher reality. It's a counting representing and focusing and revealing our subservience to a greater reality, that we are nothing on our own, and we're incomplete on our own, and our whole existence, our whole prominence, our whole importance is taken that we are half, that we are actually connected to a higher world, to a hidden world, to the world of godliness, the world of infinity, the world of holiness. When we count ourselves, or we get counted, understanding that reality, that truth, then the counting becomes a good counting. It becomes a counting of blessing, becomes a counting of prominence, becomes a counting of preciousness. That doesn't mean that we lose our strength. One of the fascinating things about Machzis HaShekel is this. The Torah emphasizes that a shekel is 20 gerah. Right? And that half a shekel, therefore, is 10 gerah. Right? That's very interesting because 10 is a complete number. 10 actually normally is a number of perfection. Right? And in fact, each of us in our neshama, in our souls, we have 10 powers. We've talked about this many times. We're all governed by the 10 powers of the soul. Right? So humility doesn't mean that we lose ourselves, we are dissolved, we are diluted. On the contrary, it gives us more prominence, it gives us more strength, more perfection, more completion, that the 10 powers of our soul are actually working really well. So the half a shekel doesn't take away from the perfection and the completeness of the 10 gerah, you understand? And the Torah emphasizes it, says it's going to be 10 gerah. But 10 gerah of prominence, 10 gerah of humility, 10 gerah connected to something higher, and that's why it's a half a coin, yet it's 10 gerah. Right? And when it's done like that, that's a completely different counting. Which again goes back to the whole thing of Haman. Haman gave a very complete sum to Ahasuerus. He says, one shot, I'll give you 10,000 shekel, 10,000 kikar kesef. Right? Who was it coming from? It was coming from Haman. Haman is the grandson or the descendant of Amalek. Now, Amalek is a symbol of arrogance. That is, Kabbalistically, Amalek represents the concept of arrogance. So the 10,000 kikar are coming from the source of arrogance. Hashem says, you're finished. Because their shekels preceded your shekels. What's the power of their shekels? Their shekels not coming from arrogance. Their shekels not one big lump sum. Their shekels is each person giving a half a shekel. It's shekels of humility. And therefore their power is much greater than yours because they're connected to a higher source. You're working on arrogance. Arrogance only works in this world. You disconnect it from everything higher. It's a very temporary and transient existence. Their shekels came before yours. Their shekels is half a shekel. Yes, they might mess up. Yes, they did mess up. That's the story of the Megillah. They went to Ahasuerus' party and all this kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, they gave a half a shekel. At the end of the day, they connected to something higher. The connection to something higher brings blessing. They might live in this world, but they're connected to the hidden world. And therefore, they're infinite. They're not mortal. And therefore, they're eternal. And they will exist. And the salvation will come. It also explains another thing. There's a medrash which says that when the Jewish people are counted, one of the imageries that are given is the Jewish people are compared to stars. Right? And there's a medrash that says that they're compared to stars with the emphasis that it's specifically stars and not the sun and the moon, not other planets. Why? What is special about stars? Stars, we know, are very powerful. Hashem, it says, gives every a name to every star. It's precious. But stars are very small, meaning to us at least. Because stars are a symbol of humility. And therefore that same idea, that's why Yidden are counted. When they counted like the sand of the sea. Again, the sea being the hidden world. They counted like stars. Stars being a symbol of humility. Right? And that's the explanation. So I thought maybe also one could add, and this is my thing, so I'm separating it from what I've shared till now. I never want to muddle up what says in Holy Sforim and my own ideas. But maybe one could suggest the following. That's why also I've always wondered, like when we count people, you're not allowed to count people, right? So we either count using a posuk, if you have to count people for a minyan, use a verse from the Torah, or we say this thing I said, like, not one, not two. And I've always wondered, what kind of trick is this not one, not two story? I mean, bottom line, you're counting. So it's a different language, that's all. Instead of saying one, you say not one, which means one. Right? So how does it actually help? I've always thought, but I thought after I learned this idea, I thought maybe that's the idea. Either you count them using a posuk of the Torah, so again, it's a different kind of counting. It's a counting connected with something higher. Or you count it using the negative, because the negative is humility. In other words, it's not like you're counting you as one, you're a big arrogant one. It's the not one. It's the diminishing of the one. So it's the idea of humility. The idea of humility connects the counted person with something higher, with something greater, with the infinity of Hashem. And then it makes the counting a good counting as opposed to the bad counting. I'm not sure if that's true, what I just told you, but I think it sounds good.
Sounds good.
Sounds right. It fits into the concept. One is, you know, there's an idea. Generally, it's an interesting idea, by the way. If one is... how much limitation there is on making up one's own ideas in Torah, right? On the one hand, we find the idea of chidush, that this idea to be innovative in Torah. On the other hand, there's a caution that, you know, you also make up things that they used to say like this. When I was a kid, my father told me this joke. They used to say like this, that you know, it says in the Gemara that any chidush, any innovative idea that anyone will come up in Torah, potentially was all there in Har Sinai already. In other words, Hashem gave the Torah. In the rules of the Torah was the potential for all other... Right? So it says that, yeah, everyone should expose and reveal new concepts in Torah, which is called in Hebrew, called a chidush, in other words, something new. But understand that if it's something new and if it's legitimately Torah, then really it was all rooted back in Sinai. So there's a saying in Shiva that if someone came up with an idea, like in Gemara, but was so ridiculous, they would say that's a real chidush. Why is a real chidush? Means it's completely new. It wasn't even potentially in Har Sinai. It's just completely new. But nevertheless, they say like this. Therefore, on one hand, one should be careful. On the other hand, they say that if you bring a new concept in Torah, even if it's not 100% accurate, but if it inspires you and brings you to greater service of Hashem, then it's okay. So maybe this idea that when we count people, we're reminded of the concept of humility, be humble, and it brings to the sense of that always something we connected to something greater, then it brings to a good thing. So maybe that's the idea. Okay, just a reminder, next week we're not on. We'll be back in Mitzvah the following week.